This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which I know for many of you is your favorite podcast segment, wherein we answer your questions. You send questions to us at radioprogram@AOL.com. We thank you for a very, very robust flow of questions. Been getting a lot of questions, and we appreciate it very much. They're grist for the mill for our weekly discussion, which I do with our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mudin, who is also, coincidentally, someone that I practice with at our practice here in Manhattan. So we take a teamwork approach to integrative medicine, and hopefully the patients are the beneficiaries. So before we get into questions, I want to stimulate a discussion with an opinion piece by, you know, you're a musician, so you know this guy. Mm-hmm. This guy's Moby.
Ah, Moby, yeah.
And what's he known for? I mean,
he's done some good electronica music.
Yeah.
Really good stuff. I saw him in Blue Man Group, and I think it was David Bowie when he was alive at Jones Beach or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. No,
okay.
I like Moby.
So he has written an interestingly, he's a versatile guy. He's written an op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal entitled "Food Stamps Shouldn't Pay for Junk." And he says the subtitle is SNAP. That's the name of the food stamp program, mm-hmm. Supplemental Nutritional Something Program, mm-hmm. is vital to the poor, but too often bad for their health. Now, I've actually seen Moby speak in public. I was at a banquet for the ASPCA. American Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And he is an animal rights advocate.
Wow.
And, and he was one of the featured speakers there.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a militant vegan.
That I know.
And politically, he is very much, I have to say he's very much on the left.
Yeah.
Politically. But it seems he's sort of taking common cause with the current administration, which is seeking to, limit food stamp availability, shall we say, or maybe place certain strictures or restrictions on food stamps. What he says is the food stamp program started as a way to help people whose shelves were empty. It certainly helped my family. My mother was a single parent who struggled to make ends meet in wealthy Darien, Connecticut during the 1970s.
Wow.
We relied on food stamps until I was 16. Blah, 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 blah. He says the program has grown considerably. SNAP rules allow stores to distribute candy, soda, cheese products, energy drinks, processed meats, and a lot of other items that end up seriously compromising the health of SNAP recipients. The program's price tag is around $70 billion a year. He says that's high, but the costs to human health are much higher. An October 2017 study in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, which, by the way, we reviewed here on Intelligent Medicine, mm-hmm. found that SNAP participants have worse diets than non-participants. So the idea being is that we don't want people to die of malnutrition in this country. But the problem is not so much malnutrition, it's poor nutrition.
Yes.
It's, I mean, it's not undernutrition, it's overnutrition.
It's
with the
overnutrition, but with crappy foods.
Yeah.
So
it says
undernourished.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, poor people are 70% likelier to develop diabetes, which is a disease of excess, not of starvation. The treatment that we talk about sometimes for diabetes, type 2 diabetes, is intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
So, or caloric restriction.
Yes.
And these people certainly not experiencing caloric restriction.
Mm-hmm.
So he also says that who benefits large industrial food producers love a program that obliges the government to pay for anything and everything they produce. Selling sugar, candy, and heavily processed meats is easy when the government picks up the tab. So, blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
What say ye, Layla?
Well, first of all, he's not a nutrition expert, number one. I mean, the things that popped up at me were dairy. Well, people shouldn't consume dairy.
I think he
let's have a frank discussion about that.
He betrays his bias there.
He does. Yeah. He does betray his bias. Yes, talk about the junk food and the sugar and the cake and the chips and all of that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But I wouldn't lump all of those other foods together, including processed meat, because they're very, very good sources
of processed meat. In fact,
meat.
I have to say yesterday,
source of protein.
That reminds me, yesterday I was, I worked until late in the afternoon, then went home, deliberately didn't have lunch out, and I was starving, and I made myself a tomato, lettuce, avocado, and processed meat wrap.
Yeah.
With a something that is, it's a non-wheat wrap. It's made from
what kind of meat?
Zucchini.
Uh-huh.
And it was baked turkey.
Nice.
But it was organic and it was like no preservatives. It was, in effect, by definition, processed because it wasn't sliced off the bone.
Right.
But it was one of these higher quality and rather expensive, too.
Yeah.
And so is it bad? Is that something that we should eschew? Back to the issue of putting requirements on food stamps recipients, where do you...
I think the most obvious things that are detrimental to health, the anti-nutrients in our foods, be it sugar, refined carbohydrates, be it...
diet soda.
Diet sodas, all of that, the artificial sugars, a lot of preservatives that, well, let's not get into preservatives because even good food have some preservatives which are not great, and I don't want to attack the good food. I think it should be obvious. Don't use your SNAP benefits for beer and cigarettes. I don't think you can buy cigarettes.
No, you can't buy alcohol and you can't buy cigarettes. Right.
You can't buy any of those. Right. But, you know, stay away from the bags of Snickers or the donuts.
So I think that the problem is who decides?
Who decides?
And if you were to sit down, or I were to sit down on a panel with Moby, Moby might say, well, let's pay for broccoli and fresh fruit and whole wheat bread. And we might say, but
even at local farmers markets, they're taking EBT, they're taking food stamp benefits there too, which is wonderful. That hadn't been for quite a few years when the farmers market started. So now it's not a food desert.
They have new apps
anymore
that allow them to do that.
Exactly.
So, but what would be, let's say you're in charge of the SNAP program. Yeah. What would you immediately, disqualify from SNAP?
Candy, cookies, soda, soft drinks, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Things that aren't real food.
Okay.
Primarily.
Okay.
And then more on an ad hoc basis, because you will have a manufacturer come out and say, yeah, but this is under cheese, but no, it's a cheese doodle. I don't want SNAP benefits paying for something like that.
Right.
For example.
Right.
So
if people want those things, they should be luxury items. Right, that they pay with discretionary dollars, their own discretionary dollars.
I wouldn't even call it luxury if you want.
Well, for them,
it's luxury. So which is unfortunate. Well, here's the biggest thing that I have a problem with. If we allow people to eat a bag of Snickers for lunch and dinner with their SNAP benefits, what happens when they wind up in the ER? And if you're getting SNAP benefits, it's likely that you may be on Medicaid or some other kind of sponsored health program, and that's more tax dollars paying for your bad behavior.
Right. But so one of the counter arguments that I've heard is that you don't want to stigmatize people at the checkout line. In other words, don't want to, like, as you sit at the checkout, wait, put that bag of cookies back. You know, it's like, you know, you can't have that, you know, candy bar, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. Or, you know,
look, I know all about SNAP benefits and everything when I was...
I had them.
Yeah. When I was
a teenager. I was really poor.
When I was a teenager, my grandmother was on it, and I would do her shopping.
Yeah.
She was pretty much homebound.
Yeah.
And I remember the looks I would get. And this is before it was looking like a debit card.
Mm-hmm.
These were actual coupons that you took out of a book and you handed.
Yeah.
And I remember the vicious looks. And I wanted to explain, no, this isn't for me. This is for my grandmother who needs a little more help, but we're not able to help her that much ourselves right now.
Right, right.
What do you do?
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Right, so...
Just so the audience understands, this is not some kind of elitist perspective or anything that, but...
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, we're all for
helping
and subsidizing, but I think
the subsidies
should nudge people in the direction of healthier food choices and channel the purchases towards, you know, away from unwise food choices.
Yes.
And again, it's going to be hard to determine that because from Moby's standpoint, nobody should eat meat.
Right.
And from our standpoint, you know, we want people to avoid gluten, but, you know, that's unrealistic. We're not going to say, you can't have whole wheat
bread.
Well,
we certainly want them to avoid sugar and, you know, all kinds of other anti-nutrients like that or things that aren't food.
So the big obstacle here is the food industry. They're not going to allow any restriction because they they're getting a government subsidy, basically, for their crappy food.
Right, right.
And it's $70 billion.
Yeah.
And that's big bucks. And so if all of a sudden that disappears, it's going to hurt the economy.
Sure.
And we want the economy to be roaring. We don't want our stocks to decline. We don't want to see like, one of those 700 point drops in the stock market.
Exactly. And then, you know, it's a little bit of a catch-22 because, you know, for the listener, they may look in their mutual funds and their 401ks and find that, you know, Kellogg's or General Mills is
one
of your, of course you want that to do well too, don't you? So we all have a kind of vested interest directly or indirectly.
Right.
Whichever side of the fence you're sitting on, I suppose.
But I don't want to make profits at other people's expense.
No,
so I don't want to have tobacco stocks. I don't want to
have... I don't have tobacco stocks as a matter of course.
Right.
I remember something was offered about a humidor. I said, no, thank you.
Right.
That kind of a thing. So, no, it would be nice to have a really good guideline around SNAP benefits. I think it would only benefit the person receiving the that kind of benefit.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So back to questions. Let's see what our listeners have on their minds.
Well, here we've got actually an email from Rebecca. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I recently came across this ranking of supplements, particularly magnesium supplements, but they rank all kinds of supplements, by an organization called Labdor, Incorporated, Labdor. And she included a link
to this article. How's it spelled? L-A-B-D-O-O-R?
Yeah. Yeah. I almost want to say Labrador. Anyway.
Right. It's like a Labrador retriever.
Yeah.
Right.
So she's asking, do you know anything about Labdor? In your opinion, is this reputable, unbiased testing? Based on the information on their website, Labdor is a for-profit company that makes money in part through purchases of the products listed on their website. All right. Right there equals bias.
Right. Potential conflict of interest.
Potential conflict of interest.
They rate them, then they sell them.
Yeah. So you can compare Labdor to another service like Consumer Lab, which is more pay-to-play.
Mm-hmm.
You subscribe to that service.
Right.
Labdor, you don't have to pay, which makes it very, very attractive for people looking for a website to rank the particular supplement they're taking.
And they've gotten it wrong a couple of times.
They did get it wrong a couple of times. In fact, first of all, the content authors are pictured, if you go to their website, but without their credentials, experience, or degrees, and it's unclear whether they have a scientific background, number one. So the biggest claim to fame or infamy, as this article says, may be the involvement of its founder, I'll leave his name out, in a recent erroneous report by Canadian Broadcasting System that impugned the popular emergency supplement, which, by the way, is now owned by Pfizer, as having...
I mean, that's the kind of thing you see at a checkout counter.
Exactly.
You know, it's like
emergency,
it's like,
right there.
It's like impulse buy at CVS.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh, I'm coming down with a cold.
Right.
Here it is.
Boom.
I'm at the checkout. That, and they also called out that two protein powders tested, Muscle Milk and GNC's Lean Shake, were spiked with cheap fillers. Well, these manufacturers, they cried foul immediately, and Canadian Broadcasting Corporation retested the products in question using other independent accredited labs, found no problem.
Okay.
So the owner admits his labs produced erroneous results, but he has no explanation.
Right.
So, no, would this be something that I would depend on or refer people to?
So here, there's some issues with these rating labs, both Consumer what is it called?
Consumer Labs.
Consumer Labs.
And this is Labdoor.
Labdoor. Mm-hmm. The problem is that the methodology is not easy. So there are various ways to test for product quality. Mm-hmm. And they are controversial. Mm-hmm. There's no, it's not yet rocket science in terms of assessing the potential for contamination. Well, that's a little easier. You can find those things more easily.
Yeah.
But also, identifying effective ingredients is tough mm-hmm. sometimes. So if you're, say, looking at a green tea product, I once was offered some material for my own green tea. I wanted to formulate my green tea, and the guy said, it's great. Here's the assay. Mm-hmm. And he had an assay. He showed, and an assay means that he sent it to his lab, and it showed that it was 70% EGCG. But I didn't even know. Maybe it was whatever the percentage.
Yeah.
And so I said, that's fine. But before I make, hundreds and thousands of bottles of this and sell this to people, I want to independently assay it. He said, well, you don't have to. I already did that. I save you the money. I said, look, I would rather spend a few $100 and do perform my own assay. So give me a sample and I'll assay it. And I assayed it and it came back almost zero of the active ingredient.
Oh my goodness.
So there's a discrepancy. Now, was he right and I was wrong? Was I wrong and he was right? That illustrates the problem is that you go to different labs, you get different answers.
Yeah.
And the vitamin companies, they self-assay. Mm-hmm. The big companies, they actually randomly pick products when they receive ingredients, which come in these big cement bags,
it's
by the way.
It's quality control.
Yeah.
It's part of any manufacturing
QC.
Quality.
Yeah. They assay, like they get a new barrel of something. How do they know that they may have spent like $10,000 on a barrel of alpha-lipoic acid?
How do they know they got what they got?
And it's safe and it doesn't have any solvents in it or anything. So they test that. Okay, boom. Then they sometimes randomly pick something off the assembly line and they will test it again to see if it maintained its integrity, through the manufacturing process with the heat and the whatever, So it ain't easy to assay products.
Right.
And they can make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is what happened when the Attorney General Schneiderman in New York assayed GNC products. He used a technique that was the wrong technique. He used DNA barcoding, which is not appropriate for the products he was testing.
Yeah.
And
there was already a standard
they
of testing, which he did not
You want
follow.
To use HPLC for that, which is, we're talking a little bit in the weeds here, but, you can show there's nothing in there, mm-hmm. but by one test, and another test will show that, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, Rebecca, what I would say to you on these rankings of magnesium that you looked at, I wouldn't necessarily trust that result either. That isn't something that I would do. What I would do, you could call the nutraceutical on your own and inquire there and ask for their kind of quality testing or quality control and make your determination.
And,
that way.
It also argues that in general, it's a good idea to buy from big manufacturers that have a high profile and have a good reputation.
Yes.
And that's where it's a little bit like where we come in, because we've been studying this for years. I am an idiot when it comes to stock picking. So I don't pick stocks. What do I know from stocks? I don't spend my brain cells on that. But I will rely on hopefully trusted experts to help me if I save some money and I want to invest it,
Right, right. So exactly that. So Rebecca, it's kind of tough what they do and the fact that they have this kind of history of discrediting, and the fact that they are for profit right there makes me go, ew.
Yeah, a little potential. It just is concerning.
Yeah.
Okay. They have to have a business model. They have to monetize. Sure. And so,
Sure.
Okay, what's our next question, please?
Our next question comes from Randy. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, are there any peer-reviewed studies on vitamin K and chiolic garlic as related to their benefits in plaque prevention?
Well, yes.
Yes.
Look them up.
Yeah, you need to look them up. Yeah. Randy, where you should go is to pubmed.gov. That's pubmed.gov, where you will get lists and lists of hundreds of thousands of citations. You just put in your MeSH term. You look for what you're looking for, and you will get a bunch of citations that you could then go to, I think, the Academy of Medicine, if you don't already have a subscription to peer-reviewed journals on your own, you could go to the Academy of Medicine's library uptown and pay for some of these articles and read about them. But the reason that vitamin K and chiolic garlic are being touted is because of that research that's in place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rigorous research. Otherwise, it wouldn't be recommended. So
that's all we're going to say. Go look it up.
Or
are we going to
look it up?
Are we going to give him an answer?
Right.
Yeah, let's be generous. Let's give him an answer.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So the main researcher on vitamin K, and I just heard him lecture,
yeah.
Is a guy named Schurgers. He's from the Netherlands. Uh-huh. And it's spelled S-C-H-U-R-G-E-R-S. So put that into your search and it'll probably come up. I'm looking now at a study from the National Institutes of Health about vitamin K in relationship to prevention of calcification in the coronary arteries. That's his expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And also in terms of bone enhancement, he's more an expert on the cardiovascular benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the vitamin K, and there are peer-reviewed articles about this, so fine. We're not just making it up. When it comes to chiolic H garlic extract, there are studies, and I'm just looking up the name of the researcher. I usually have it on the tip of my tongue. He's one of the experts on CT scanning of the coronary arteries.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Matthew Budoff now that I see, and he has a peer-reviewed article entitled "Aged Garlic Extract Retards Progression of Coronary Artery Calcification" in the Journal of Nutrition, published about 10 years ago. There's been subsequent research on favorable effects on inflammatory markers and on coronary atherosclerosis progression and on blood pressure. So there are such articles.
Mm.
2016, new study shows aged garlic extract can reduce dangerous plaque buildup in arteries. So that's the most recent one. Again, Matthew Budoff, B-U-D-O-F-F, is the expert. So that's talking the real deal here. I mean, you know, some things it's like, you know, this ancient palm kernel extract was used by the South Pacific Islanders, you know, for centuries, and they have bright skin and shiny hair.
And they don't go gray.
Right. And, you know, okay, that's what's called folkloric or anecdotal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not been subject to scientific, mm-hmm. rigorous scientific analysis. But these are the K2 and you can take them to the bank, you mm-hmm. know, in terms of their efficacy because it's been scientifically demonstrated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Brandy, thank you for your question. All right.
It's a good point at which to pause to divide our podcast in half, because we divide our podcast into two parts. So in part two, Layla, give us a foretaste of what we're going to tackle in part two.
We've got somebody sent us an article that says, "The Dark Truth About Chocolate."
All right.
Uh-oh.
Okay, well, is it the dark truth about dark chocolate?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Chocolate industry.
Okay,
maybe.
So, you know, this is like, that chocolate thing is a little bit like, you know, dog bites man. Okay, that's boring. Now man bites dog.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we know about chocolate benefits. Now we're going to talk about how chocolate may not be so beneficial in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mudin, our nutritionist in residence. And we'll be right back with more of our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is Intelligent Medicine.